ナモミョウレンゲイキョウ、ナモミョウレンゲイキョウ、ナモミョウレンゲイキョウ。Hi everyone, I hope this finds you in good health and secure. Let's do another entry into volume 2 of Buddhism Reference. Brahma. Who the heck is he? Well, I mean, it's an ancient term. It's not strictly Buddhist. But in Buddhist storytelling, it's often used because why? He was talking to Indians, Asian Indians, not, you know, indigenous peoples of different continents, Indians of Asia. And they were steeped in centuries of magical, mystical, mystery tours, religions, and all sorts of characterizations, personages. But they kind of understood the personages to be actual reality in some fanciful way. But this is a cultural thing. They were raised and ruled in their caste system by the paradigm set forth in, whether it was, you call it Hindis or Hinduisms or Brahmanisms, or there were several branches, right? I mean, to this day, there's over 125 independent languages in India. So this is a huge country with a lot of people with different cultural norms, but they all shared various aspects, right? And they all had their own folklore, right? So now you're talking to people like this about some singular self-enlightening methodology, and they're all looking at you like, a little cockapoo going, eh? Much easier to use terms they're familiar with to slowly guide them into deeper and deeper knowledge, capacity, understanding, right? So Shakyamuni was expert at that, and this is why you see these terms used. From Britannica, Brahma, one of the major gods of Hinduism, from about 500 BCE to 500 CE, who was gradually eclipsed by Vishnu, Shiva, and the great goddess in her multiple aspects. Associated with the Vedic creator, the god Prajapati, whose identity he assumed, Brahma was born from a golden egg and created the earth and all things on it. Sound like a familiar story? You Christians? No, God wasn't born of a golden egg, but the creation of the earth story, right? The myth. Later myths described him as having come forth from a lotus that issued from Vishnu's navel. I tell you, talk about storytelling. To what purpose, I'm not sure, but very colorful stuff, yeah? By the middle of the first millennium CE, common era, if you don't know that, common era, make sure I enunciate that, an attempt to synthesize the diverging sectarian traditions is evident in the doctrine of the Trimurti, which considers Vishnu, Shiva, and Brahma as three forms of the supreme unmanifested deity. I wonder why they started doing that. Could maybe Buddhism have anything to do with it? By the 7th century, Brahma had largely lost his claim to being a supreme deity, although the Trimurti continued to figure importantly in both text and sculpture. Today, there is no sect that exclusively worships Brahma, and few temples are dedicated to him. Nevertheless, most temples dedicated to Shiva or Vishnu contain an image of Brahma. So, that's Britannica. Reference to Brahma from Buddhism simply illustrate the teaching being addressed to the cultural vernacular of the capacity and time of the students of the day, which is what I said earlier. Brahma in Buddhism. Brahma is a leading god, deva, right, deity, and heavenly king in Buddhism. In the teachings of Buddhism, I should say. He is considered as a protector of the teachings, the Dharmapala, and he is never depicted in early Buddhist texts as a creator god. So again, this is just the language of the culture, the familiarity of language that gets people to think about the different aspects of the mind, our imagination, right? In Buddhist tradition, it was the deity Brahma Sahampati who appeared before the Buddha and invited him to teach once the Buddha had attained enlightenment. So obviously what that means is that when he attained enlightenment, Siddhartha Gautama was urged for the good of the people to spread this method, this way of purifying your life, creating the maximum potential in your life. He was urged to do so. So don't think this is me and my ego pushing this new way of thinking on you. I was urged by the need of people to share it. There's a politic in that, and there's a sensitivity to people's doubts about a new idea, right? They tend to resist. So he says, I'm not trying to force this on you. There's this feeling of urgency for me to share it because there's such a vast need. That's where this idea of Brahma becomes useful. You see? Brahma lords over the heavenly realm of rebirth, called the Brahma Loka, one of the highest realms in Buddhist cosmology. Brahma is generally represented in Buddhist culture as a god with four faces and four arms, and variants of him are found in Mahayana Buddhist cultures. So this is Brahma playing a role in accessing people's openness to a new way of thinking. Okay? Now, we also hear the Brahma world as a term we've heard in this BDK translation of the Lotus Sutra. Why is it there? It doesn't need to be there. Mahayana is beyond this, but the culture of the Tripitaka, the Pali canon, still maintains this early rhetoric that they should have dropped, but they're still pushing it into the Lotus Sutra. Okay, let's understand what they mean. When we encounter the use of the term Brahma in combination with world or realm, more appropriate to our dialogue, we must consider that Buddhism is about the mind and its many influences. 3,000 realms, right? Look at the first volume. Lots of information on the 3,000 realms in a single thought moment, yes? To the people of Shakyamuni's day, Brahma represented the highest aspirations of life. Teaching to their capacities, this Brahma world, quote-unquote, made palpable the idea of experiencing a mental state beyond the limited perceptions of the mundane Saha, quote-unquote, world. So it raises aspiration for a different way of experiencing life. That's the Brahma world. Enter this realm, yes? You could say, substitute that with Buddha-ness, you got it. Or even Bodhisattva. All right, so that's Brahma world. Next up on here is the ceremony in the sky. There's a lot of information on that, and it speaks directly to our practice. And if you go to threefoldlotus.com and the core study materials page, you'll see a link there right at the top for presence at the Butsudan. And I talk about that ceremony in the sky, that attitude, the sensation of involvement with your Mandala and Gohanzon mind, opening the eye of Buddha. It's all in Ceremony in the Sky, or the Treasure Tower chapter of the Lotus Sutra, right? Which we're going to read soon. So that's it for this term. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your support, right? Take a moment if you can. You know, the links are in the description for Patreon, for PayPal, for the website, so on and so forth. Even just liking and subscribing, very valuable to our effort to grow this Sangha, spread, propagate this resource. So that's a little bodhisattva act, isn't it? Thank you for doing that. In the meantime, be kind to yourself by taking care of your health, and I'll see you in the next one, okay? Bye for now.